Hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this week we will be covering a case that is pretty emotional, I would say. Greg is leading this episode today. What are we covering today, Greg?
Yeah, this is a very hard-hitting case. It hit me hard when I was researching it.
I bet.
But it's also a super unique case. Like, we were talking about this before we started recording. I don't think there's many or any cases that quite have the same shock factor and unique set of circumstances that surround this case.
Wow. Yeah, I'm intrigued to know all the details about this case. I've seen bits about it, but I haven't gone into deep depth research about it. So I'm interested to know more, but I'm also a little nervous about quite how, I don't know, emotional it could be.
Yeah, I think it's pretty well known as like a headline. A lot of people are familiar with the name of the case, but when you actually dig into the details, the case is of the Turpin family, so that probably rings a bell to a lot of people, but not many people know truly what happened and for how long and how things began to escalate in the Turpin household.
Yes.
And it's just awful. Really, really sad.
Yeah, awful. Definitely. Before we get into the case, though, how have you been? What's your week been like?
I'm doing excellently. I started my new job. Well, I think I've said that every podcast for the last few episodes.
It's still new.
It's still new. I think I can say it for a couple more podcast episodes still. And yeah, it's going really great. I'm really enjoying it. And it's really nice working with lots of energetic people. And then outside of work, well, my neighbours have been moving a lot of heavy furniture around. So I don't know if you can hear that right now. I can, very annoyingly. But I'm also playing football tonight for the first time in a while.
Ooh.
Because I had a little comeback in December, played a couple of 11-a-side games. And then someone posted on Reddit, the local subreddit basically, saying like, hey, I'm trying to get some people together for a kickabout. And I said, yeah, so tonight I'll be rolling back the years.
Hey! And, look at that.
Try not to cough up a lung.
Was it football? Was it just before Christmas you played football and then you couldn't walk for a few days? Are we going to have a revisit of that?
I think so. Because I did my legs today in the gym as well, because I didn't with much foresight. So tomorrow I'm probably going to have like a double whammy of some intense running and leg lifting, which is going to hurt, going to pay the price tomorrow.
Oh, for sure. That might be a rookie error.
I think so, yeah. Schoolboy error on my part. How about you, though? How's life in Georgetown?
Yeah, going well, thanks. I went into uni for the first time this year yesterday, and it was so nice to see all my course mates, like, back from Christmas. They're just, like, great people. They're just great people to chat to. So that was really good. And I actually finally think that my course is, like, clicking. You know when, well, before Christmas, I was sat in a lot of lectures going, oh God, I am so overwhelmed. I don't understand what he's saying. Like, yesterday was the first time I sat in a lecture and I went, I actually understand this. Like, I know what he's talking about now. So it's sort of like a bit of a relief that, okay, I got this thing. We'll do it. So yeah.
I think the first part is how I feel in everyday life.
Yeah.
Just trying to navigate just social situations. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are they saying?
Definitely, for sure. But yeah, so that's really nice. But yeah, life's good. Life's all good.
Nice. Have you still been climbing?
I have, yes. I've actually been going quite regularly now. I've been doing it like 2 or 3 times a week, which is crazy.
Ooh.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm improving. I'm still like such a beginner. And I'm sure that when people see me climb, they're like, what the hell is she doing? But I'm giving it my best go. But I'm really enjoying it.
That's the most important thing. That's the most important part.
For sure. I don't think, though, my body, like, my body aches every single day, though. Like, it would be nice, like, once I've built all the muscles up and I can actually, like, come out of it the next day not, like, hurting. But, yeah. It's almost a good thing, though. It means that you're doing the right thing. Like, you're working those things. But yeah, it's good fun, though. Definitely really good fun.
Yeah, sometimes it's a reassuring pain.
Yeah. It's like a
hey,
good
I'm making
burn.
Progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no pain, no gain, as they say.
That's the one. That is the one. Yeah, so really good. Really enjoying it.
Oh, awesome.
Shall we dive into this case?
Let's do it. Let's get started. Today, we're going to be talking about the Turpin family. And as we said at the beginning, this case is a really startling one. I'll put some trigger warnings in now for child abuse, child neglect. I don't have any kids and this hit me hard. So yeah, really brace yourself if you've got children, because I think there's parts of this where there is like a shock factor, but I just think it's a super unsettling episode throughout to think of parents that can do this to their children.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, but we will persevere regardless.
Absolutely.
You can find countless photos of the Turpin family online. For example, pictures of the entire clan enjoying one of their many trips to Disneyland. Mother and father, Louise and David Turpin, would pose with beaming smiles, and they'd be surrounded by their children, often dressed in the same outfits. To any unknowing onlooker, they would have seemed like an ordinary family, if a little cheesy. Have you ever seen those photos, by the way?
I have, yeah. And I saw it. So I'd watched like a video about this case, and then I saw the photos of them at Disneyland in that like juxtaposition, or like, it's just really, really shocking and unsettling. Like it's yeah, haunting really, knowing what they're going, you know, what they're going through at the time.
Absolutely. And there's a whole load of like photos and videos of this entire family, including, and I'm going off piece now, but including a video of an Elvis impersonator doing a wedding vow renewal for the parents, David and Louise Turpin.
Really?
And all the children in the background doing like a little bit of dancing, and it's very, very bizarre. Very bizarre. Strange. However, despite all these smiley photos, there was an extremely sinister side to Louise and David Turpin. It led them to commit crimes against their own family that many can't even fathom. But before we talk about the crime, let's talk about the criminals, Louise and David Turpin. Louise was born in May 1968 as one of six siblings. She was the daughter of a preacher. Supposedly, Louise's life had an abusive theme. Her sister claimed that their mother regularly pimped them out to a wealthy paedophile.
No. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. And some of the quotes around that are pretty shocking, about feeling his breath on their necks. And,
oh,
yeah, it's pretty gross.
No, no. Awful. So she's come from a family that her mother could do something, you know, heinous to her child, which is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It is interesting because obviously, you know, I don't really think it's a spoiler because enough people know enough about this case.
Yeah.
But that is the cycle of abuse, and it clearly started during Louise's childhood. Despite this, Louise's sister claimed that Louise was always considered to be the good one. Louise never drank, she never smoked, and she never did drugs.
Okay.
I'd also add, by the way, at this point, I'm making it sound like I'm throwing a lot of sympathy Louise's way.
Mm-hmm.
But even though she had a sad childhood, like, don't feel too much sympathy for her before we get into the rest of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, it's difficult. I think we've discussed this with other serial killers and criminals in the podcast that, you know, when they are a child, they are technically innocent. Like, they haven't had, you know, they have been witness to abuse themselves. But as soon as they cross the line where they are committing stuff or, you know, replicating this abuse to other people, that, you know, at that point, no more sympathy and things. Like, it's just, there's no excuse, really.
Exactly. And it helps us as hosts and people listening to understand a bit about the background, like, what goes into making a person like this?
Yes.
That's why we go through this stuff. It's not necessarily to say, oh, poor Louise. Of course, you know, very sad upbringing. But like you say, as soon as that person takes proactive action to repeat the cycle of abuse, that's problematic. And that's when you kind of put the sympathy aside.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Louise met her future husband, David Turpin, when she was just 16 and still in high school. David was 23 at the time.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
It's difficult because when you're older, a 7-year age difference, so I guess, yeah, 7 years, doesn't seem too strange, you know, if they're in their 40s or whatever. But I just think when you're 23, 16 is so young. So young.
Very young.
You know, you're in high school, just leaving high school, going into college. It's like, you've got so much to learn. Like, you're still an adolescent, really. So it does seem a little bit, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Absolutely. I'm only a couple years older than David was at the time. I have absolutely nothing in common with a 16-year-old.
No. Doesn't sit right.
David himself had a decent childhood and a promising career by all accounts. He studied computer engineering and went on to work for some pretty prestigious organisations. The Turpins both had strong Christian beliefs. This led them to believing God called on them to have many, many children. And they obliged. They really did have many children. 13 in total.
13, 1-3. Wow. That's a lot of children.
That is a lot of kids. And also, the children were born between 1988 and 2015, which is 27 years difference, which is a long...
Wow.
A long, long time to be having babies.
Baby after baby. That's a... Yeah. My gosh.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. No it words.
It also would have mean that when the last baby was born, Louise was in her mid-40s.
Wow. Mm. I just keep thinking, like, there wouldn't... Over that 26 years, they're just like, there wouldn't be a moment when there wasn't, like, a baby crying in the household. Like, there wouldn't be much peace and quiet.
Yeah, it's a hell of a commitment to a lot of children. And, yeah, of the 13, 10 were girls. And 3 were boys.
Oh, okay.
The Turpins sadly spent most of their time as parents, abusing and neglecting their children.
Oh, yeah.
One of Louise's sisters, called Elizabeth, spent a summer with Louise and David when they lived in Fort Worth. Her outline of what she saw gives a glimpse into what the Turpin children experienced at the hands of their awful parents. When Elizabeth moved in, she quickly realised her sister and brother-in-law were very strict with their children. At the time, by the way, I think they only had 3 or 4 children.
Okay.
The children had to ask for permission to eat and permission to go to the bathroom.
Oh.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine being like, you can't go to the toilet until
that's
you ask.
That's strange. That's not okay. There's so much control.
Doesn't benefit anyone, really.
No.
Elizabeth never saw David or Louise show the children any affection. Elizabeth also described the horribly ritualistic dinner time she witnessed at the home of the Turpin family. After placing plates of food on the table, Louise would ask the children to come and eat one at a time. Louise was apparently always hardest on Jennifer, the oldest. Before being allowed to eat, Jennifer, who was in the first grade at the time, had to look her mother in the eye and smile, and then wait for her food to be returned. And then Louise would say, okay, sit down now. And then Jennifer would literally just sit there and wait for permission to eat. So huge amounts of control going on.
That's scary.
Very scary.
So Jennifer would finish her food. She'd be allowed to leave the table for then the next one to come in and repeat the cycle of this like strange ritual during every mealtime, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's just unheard of. So weird. Like, why? Just why? Why?
Yeah, it does sound very weird. Like, that one in, one out system at the dinner table. Bizarre. The summer after Elizabeth's visit, all the Turpin children dropped out of public school. They'd never return, as David had decided to homeschool them. The Turpins were in dire financial trouble at the time. By all accounts, Louise had a serious gambling problem despite her Christianity. And eventually, the bank foreclosed on their home and the Turpins were forced to move. There's also some interesting stories about Louise and gambling when her sister Elizabeth was there. Apparently, a lot of arguments. They'd drive up to Atlantic City to gamble. Yeah, sounds like that had a hold on her.
Yeah, it was a big factor in her life.
Yeah. The people that moved into the Turpin home after they left were so horrified by the conditions that they took photos. Apparently, the house stank and the entire property was caked in grime.
Ooh.
And there was, this is gross, so a bit of a trigger warning. There were stains of feces that had been wiped across the walls.
Oh, no one should live like that.
No one.
It's not okay. These poor children.
The Turpin family moved to a small town in Texas. The neglect they showed their children in the previous home began to turn physical and violent.
Oh.
According to an officer who was later involved in the case, it began with slapping and hitting before the parents began to utilize belts.
No. Oh my gosh.
And then they took it even further and began to use either a paddle or an oar.
What?
Which is just horrific.
Oh my gosh. These poor kids.
These are, yeah, young children too. The abuse began to become more like torture. The Turpin parents began only letting their children shower once a year.
Once a year?
Once a year.
Oh my
God. It really is. Like, reading this back to myself, because I wrote these notes last night, like, it's, I realise now it's just all about control. Everything they're doing is about controlling their children.
They can't do anything without the permission or doing it in some sort of ritual way. And I'm sure if they didn't do it quite as they've been told to do, that they'd be punished for it. And yeah, it does sound like it's turning into more of a torture, like torture and punishment and, oh, it's awful. Just awful.
Yeah, I mean, no one wins out of letting your children only shower once a year.
Once a year?
The only thing they're getting is control.
That's just, yeah.
It must have been, yeah, really unpleasant.
Poor children.
And it sounds like it really shows in the house. You know, you can tell with all the grime and all the, ugh.
Hygiene.
Unpleasant.
You just get ill as well. You'd get so ill. Oh.
Mm. The parents also completely neglected their children's education. By all accounts, Jennifer tried to teach her younger siblings what she'd learned in her 3 years of education, but many of the children could not read and could not write.
Oh. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The children were barely fed to the point where their growth was stunted. We're not going to share any of the photos of the children who haven't publicly spoken about the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Respect their privacy. But there are pictures out there and you can see, even on the pictures where their face is blurred out, you can still see in their arms, in their legs. Like, these are very fragile children.
Awful. How can you... I mean, that's the thing. I just don't understand why or how parents could ever do this to their children. And the amount of abuse in this family, like, but on so many different levels, like controlling the food, showering, no education, living in a state where hygiene is just not even there. Food, it's just so extreme. It's unheard of.
I think that's the hard part about this case is, like, you just can't wrap your head around why they did this.
Yeah.
To have so many children and to neglect and abuse all of them.
They didn't care for their children, and yet they had 13. Why have children? Just don't have children. Like,
yeah.
Just, and for it to go on for so long and for them to get away with it for so long is just unbelievable, really.
Yeah, that's one of the heartbreaking parts about this case, is that it just happened for so long.
Yeah.
But on the point of photos, and I talked about this near the beginning of the episode, you know, despite putting their children through this awful, awful abuse, Louise would still get them to dress up in matching outfits, smile, and take photos that she could send to her family.
Yeah, I just can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, nor me. And now things get even crazier at this point. It's 2004, and the Turpin parents have had 10 children at this point. The house is completely uninhabitable from the stains, the mess, from abusing so many children for so long. So the family moved into a trailer that they parked on their current property.
Oh, wow. Okay.
By 2006, two more children have been born. And at this point, David has built a literal cage to imprison any of the children that break rules.
What? Oh my gosh. This abuse is just... oh, unfathomable.
And then it gets even more bizarre, because David and Louise just move away. They...
what do you mean? They just move?
They move away. David and Louise, the parents, take their two youngest children, and they move into an apartment that's 40 kilometres away, and they leave 40. And they just leave all the other children to fend for themselves.
Wait, what? Oh my gosh, what? Why? What? So they just left these 10 children alone in the house?
Yep.
Obviously terrified for their life, and then they just, with the two youngest, leave 40 kilometres as well.
So far.
So far away.
Yeah, they left the 10 other children to fend for themselves, and the two oldest children were in charge and had to try and keep some order.
Oh my gosh.
David would drop food off once a week, but apparently it was never enough to feed everyone. Even though Louise never visited, she controlled their children via the phone.
I was going to say that the amount of control that they must have had over those 10 children that were living in a house by themselves, for them not to leave or to escape, like, the fear must have been so ingrained into, well, it's all they ever have ever known, for them not to have tried to break out.
Yeah.
And just a phone call can control 10 children. It's unbelievable amount of control.
They've definitely brainwashed the children. And the children know no different. They've lived in that house all their lives, yeah, and not been exposed to anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eventually, the family all came back together, but they had to leave the property where they parked the trailer. When they left, neighbours found feces. They found beds with ropes tied to them, all within the house.
Oh my gosh.
I guess this is a trigger warning too. They even found dead cats and piles of garbage.
What? Oh my gosh. I wonder what those neighbours would have thought. Like,
well,
oh my gosh.
To my surprise, they didn't actually contact the authorities.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that.
I am too. Because, to be fair, I don't want to put blame on the neighbours, but
if
they had some inkling that there were children living there, and you find piles of dead cats, dead pets, beds with ropes tied to them,
and the condition,
it's normally an indication that, yeah, you should give the police a courtesy call, I think.
Yeah. I thought maybe, you know, because they've moved away that they may not be able to find them, but there would be Louise and David, their name on, you know, the deed for the house, or those children aren't safe. They aren't safe living in that condition. But
nope.
No. I mean, I'm not sure what Dave and Louise were like as people. Obviously not very good. But maybe neighbours were thinking, I don't want to, you know, they're scary people. I don't know if I want to get involved, but I don't know. It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Well, they just look weird. They don't look, like, scary. They're not...
They're threatening, or no?
If you see a picture of them, well, I mean, some pictures, they look, like, evil.
Yeah.
And they... Well, they are. But, equally, like, I wouldn't be fearful of them as a grown adult.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, like I understand that.
Like, David has just the most ridiculous haircut. It's like a bowl cut that he's kept for, like, 30-odd years.
Really? Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, he looks daft. He looks like a cartoon character. I guess we can say this because he's the bloody killer. Sorry, because he's the bloody criminal.
Yeah.
But, you know, they look ridiculous. They look like cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Almost like a couple of villains from South Park or something.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know then. I'm surprised, but...
Anyhow, if you're still with us after all those horrible details, the good news is that there is an escape. The children had discussed an escape for a couple of years, and then on January the 14th, 2018, in the early hours of the morning, Jordan Turpin and her younger sister escaped through a window.
Oh my gosh.
The younger Turpin child became scared and turned back, but Jordan powered on. She managed to call 911 on a deactivated cell phone she retrieved from the house. When the first police officer arrived, Jordan had some difficulty convincing him that the situation was severe. The police officer had taken his call because it was the last one at the end of his shift. And we'll hear in a second, because I have got a clip, but he's asking her a lot of questions, and he also assumed before taking the call that it would just be a run-of-the-mill runaway.
Yeah.
However, Jordan finally got through to the police officer when she recalled that she had some photos, and things spun into motion. So before we go on, let's listen to a couple of minutes of this clip.
Okay.
Hi, what's going on?
Okay. I just ran away from home.
Okay.
And I live in a family of 15.
Okay.
My two little sisters right now are chained up.
They're chained up?
Yes.
Where are they chained up at?
On their bed. Now, mother didn't chain them up just to be mean. Okay. They're chained up because they stole mother's food.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sorry if I talk too much. Okay. I've never talked to anybody out there, so I've never been alone with a person, so this is very hard for me to talk. Okay.
How did you, do your parents know you left your house?
No, they don't.
Do you take any medication?
What's medication?
Medication?
Yeah, what's medication?
Do you take pills?
Oh, don't think I've ever taken a pill before.
Okay.
Right, I haven't. But our parents are abusing. They abuse us. But the reason I called and the reason I managed to get out here, this is one of the most scariest things I've ever done.
Uh-huh.
I'm terrified. But I called because my two little sisters, they're chained up right now.
Do you have pictures of that?
Yes, I can show you. I actually didn't have it, and then one of my sisters told me I need to get pictures.
You have pictures of your sisters chained up?
Yes, but they're in here. I don't have proof of everything, but I have proof that my sisters are chained up. So see, those are the places that make it known that. And see how dirty she is? We're so filthy. We don't take baths. We don't.
How did your sisters get like this?
Okay.
Your parents chained them up?
Yes, because they stole food.
Okay.
But they stole it because they were hungry.
Who took this picture?
I did. I took those pictures.
Okay. You make sure to save these, okay?
Okay, I will.
Don't get rid of those.
I will. I won't.
Can you do me a favor? Take a seat in the back of my car.
Okay.
Do Do you have any injuries?
What's injuries?
Are you hurt?
Oh, no, not right now.
What are your parents going to do when they find out you left?
They're going to want to literally kill me.
What's the worst thing they've done to you?
They have choked me against the bed and...
Did you call the police?
I know, I didn't have a chance to get a phone yet. Oh, my brother's chained up too.
They're chained up?
One of my brothers is chained up too. So three people are chained up right now.
What does your mom do?
Nothing. She just stays at home. But she's always gone.
Well, why don't you guys just leave the house?
Because we're terrified. We don't really have a way. Everyone's always looking. There's always somebody.
What did you think about that?
I mean, there's probably no words to describe. I mean, throughout that, I had, like, goosebumps all through my body. The bravery that that girl must have had, like, to escape. I was fighting back tears throughout. It's just...
you're making me cry now.
No, because now you're going to get me going. It's just... For years they were waiting for a moment to escape. And they finally, like, they would have been so terrified for their life. And so the bravery it took for her to do that is just, she saved them all. She saved her siblings. And...
She really did.
Like, yeah, I mean, incredible that she was able to do that. But yeah, when she's talking to the police, you really see, like, the vocabulary and, like, how she didn't really understand a lot of the words that the police were saying, like medication, or she didn't know the word for bruises. And that really highlights, like, how, at first glance, she's been living. And then there was images on the video as well of how frail all the children look. There's just no words. That thank goodness that police officer listened, and thank goodness they took photographs, because her sister said, you've got to take photographs, otherwise they may not believe us. And what a relief that they did, and what a relief that that police officer listened to them, really, and took it seriously.
Yeah, it was the bravery that got me. Like, when I watched that video last night, when you were setting me off then, it's like, she could have easily just, like, choked up. She could have gone into some kind of, like, lockdown and just realised, he's not listening to me. I'm not going to say anymore. But she was clear.
She was. How can I, like, you know, there could have been a moment where she was like, how can I explain to him? He might not understand what I'm trying to say.
You could tell there was so much adrenaline as well. Where she was like breathing quite heavily, and she was like, okay. And it was like, it was almost like she was iterating and thinking, like, okay, this is the next way that I can tell him what's going on, and like really trying to articulate. But like you say, she had a very limited vocabulary. She didn't know what some of those words meant.
Yeah.
And yeah, thank God she managed to have pictures.
Oh, and at the back of her mind, she'll probably be thinking, what if my parents have realised that I am missing? What if they realised that all of the siblings had this plan for someone to escape? What's happening back at home whilst I'm here? Like, oh yeah, it's just, oh, I just can't, yeah, I can't believe it, can't put it into words, really. Wow.
Because she really had one shot, probably.
Yeah. Oh gosh, yeah, because imagine if it didn't work out, then yeah, there may never have been another chance for them to escape. There would have been a higher control and lockdown, like, to ensure that this didn't happen again. And
yeah, or worse.
Yeah, exactly.
There was 13 children, and only one of them made the escape.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that's because all the others were so scared about the repercussions.
Oh, absolutely. So I remember watching a video of Jennifer, the oldest, and then Jordan, being interviewed about the plan and how they were going to get away with it. And I remember that Jennifer, the oldest, says, how she thought that the responsibility fell on her, being the oldest, to make a break for it. But she said that she was so scared to do that and that she didn't know whether she could. But Jordan showed this incredible bravery, even though she wasn't one of the oldest siblings, to go out and do this thing. And, you know, she did it. But, yeah.
Yeah. Really, really impressive. And well done. Well done, Jordan. I was just, like, rooting for the whole time.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
it did kind of make me sad that she really had to fight to convince the officer. Like, I'm not blaming the officer because I understand, like, a lot of these, you know, he asked fully appropriate questions given the situation. And he did recognize the severity when Jordan showed him the pictures. But, yeah, she'd been, like, hyping herself up for years for that moment. And I was just, like, rooting. Like, every time he asked her a question, I'd be like, oh, my God, please listen to her. Even though I knew that eventually he must have.
But, yeah, you just never know. And that police officer had no idea when he took that call that this is what was going to come out of it. There's not many times that you go and pick up a runaway to take them home to discover this horrific crime. So, yeah, thank goodness he listened and her bravery. Wow.
Yeah, definitely. Within a couple of hours, the police knocked on the door of the Turpins' home. Jordan's sister said when she heard the knock, she knew her sister had succeeded. We did just watch a video, actually, didn't we, Georgia? Like a little clip, like a short clip of the police actually arriving. And Louise and David Turpin looked shell-shocked.
Oh, my gosh. Rabbit in headlights. Like, it's all going to come crashing down.
And it really, yeah, you could see that in their faces. It was like, oh, my God, we are in shit.
Yeah.
They expressed complete confusion that the police had arrived. But fortunately, as police believed there were children inside, they didn't need a warrant to go in.
Mm-hmm. When they approach the door, they basically say to each other, we're saying this is a welfare check, right? This is why we're here. And yeah, when they like creep the door open, after minutes of the police officers knocking frantically at the door, they creep the door open and their faces are just like, it's over, it's done, we can't escape this.
Yeah, you could see it all in their faces. Inside the house, the police found an awful scene. Stench filled the rooms and there were feces smeared on the walls. In one of the bedrooms, police discovered two of the Turpin girls frail and covered in bruises.
Ugh.
In another room, one of the boys is shackled to a bed. He's apparently been shackled there for weeks.
Weeks?
Mm-hmm. And I think you were saying that, like, in one of the videos, like, they said that that is the last room they checked, where they actually found one of the children shackled, like, in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. It was a while ago when I watched the video, but as they go into each room, they could see some children with just wide eyes, like, staring at them, but none of them were physically chained up until they went into this, like, back room that they could have, you know, potentially have missed. And they went in and to find this boy shackled up. And there was this, like, panic in the police officer's voice where he's like, where's the key? Where's the key? How can I, you know, take him out of these chains? And they actually have to go up to the parents and ask, like, where is the key for the shackles? And they say, oh, it's in our bedroom in a drawer. Like, they say it quite casually as if it's normal. It's not. And the police officers have to, like, clamber over all of this, like, rubbish and just mountains of stuff. And it's incredibly dirty. And they find, like, they try to, like, open one of these little drawers that's just stuff all around it and to find one of the keys to then unlock the boy. But that, you could hear the fear, like, the voice of the police officer, like, the panic and just, I mean, yeah, you could... It's just unbelievable, basically.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what the police were feeling.
Like, no, exactly. Situation.
Similarly to the previous homes, the police also found dead pets.
That's so shocking. The dead pets.
Yeah, so frequently as well. Like, every house they're leaving behind, just dead animals. It's
just don't buy pets.
Yeah, don't buy pets. The children were so malnourished that police assumed they were all under 18, only to discover that 7 were older than 18. The siblings, aged 2 to 29 at this point, were taken to a hospital where they received food and emotional support. Jennifer Turpin said it was the first time she felt free. The charges against the Turpins were a long list. 12 counts of torture, 12 counts of false imprisonment, 7 counts of abuse of a dependent adult, and 6 counts of child abuse. David had an additional charge of a lewd act on a child under 14, although it's not clear what that was in reference to.
Okay.
After changing to guilty pleas, David and Louise Turpin were sentenced to life imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 25 years. I bloody hope they never get out, though, to be honest.
I was going to say, chance of parole after 25 years. They should rot in jail. They should have the same control and punishment that they put on all 13 of their children. They should never be able to escape.
Amen. Yeah, they've come full circle. They're experiencing just a fraction, to be fair, of the control.
Yeah.
You can still shower every day in jail, you know.
You still get 3 meals a day. You're still warm. You still can communicate with other, potentially, unless they're in solitary confinement, but potentially speak to other human beings. They have access to educational support and books and reading. And yet these kids had none of that. None of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they should never be able to get out of jail.
Some of the children spoke at the trial. And interestingly, the sentiments of the children changed from child to child, and it's kind of sad. One said, "My parents took my whole life from me, and now I'm taking my life back." Which is the sort of thing you'd expect. Mm. But slightly more confusingly, one said, "I want to thank my parents for teaching me about God and faith, and I hope that they never lose their faith."
Wow.
Which to me suggests maybe some difficulty in processing what had happened to them.
Some of them, you know, they were all so young and it's all they've ever known.
Yeah.
So there probably would be a sense of fear that they're now in this big wide world with so much freedom that they just, it would take a long time, if ever, to be able to fully process what they'd gone through and what this truly means.
Yeah. Here's another quote that you might find interesting. "I saw my dad change my mum, and they almost changed me," which is kind of surprising. I mean, I still don't think there's like any blame you can take off Louise Turpin. She lived in that house for a long, long time.
No.
She certainly seems like one of the equal as an orchestrator for the abuse the children went through. But it is still kind of interesting that one of the children perceived their dad as the one that actually changed their mum.
Yeah. Oh, that is interesting. Absolutely. Both of them are both fully to blame for what they've done. But yeah, interesting.
David Turpin's statement included lines such as, "I never intended any harm to come to my children. I'm sorry if I've done anything to cause them harm."
No, I don't even want to unpack that, to be honest. That is just shameful. Like, what?
It's what? The blasé side of it as well. "I'm sorry if I've done anything to cause them harm." It's like he's not even taking responsibility. So it's like, oh, if they didn't like some of those things where I chained them up because they didn't follow a rule, I apologise.
It's like when someone says, "I'm sorry if I've offended you," or "I'm sorry, but that's kind of like..." It's your issue that you feel that I've done something wrong. It's not me taking responsibility or accountability for what I've done. And him saying, "I'm sorry if I've caused any harm to my children. I didn't intend to cause them harm." Are you joking? Like, I'm getting all riled up here. Like, what a statement.
Yeah, this guy.
That is...
gross. Yeah, I don't even feel bad for taking a piss out of his haircut now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trust me, it's worth it as well. When you see photos, or when listeners see photos, they'll understand and be like, "Wow, that is a shit trim."
Yeah.
Thankfully, though, it seems like David and Louise are unlikely to leave jail. This case does have one final tragic twist. After spending time in hospital, the six Turpin children that were still under 18 were put into two foster homes. Five of the children were placed in a home where abuse allegedly took place.
No.
And in 2019, they were adopted by that same family while the abuse was occurring. And apparently at least one of the Turpin children was subject to that abuse, which is just so sad. Like, what are the chances of that? It makes you lose faith in humanity.
Honestly, yeah, absolutely. Like, oh, let them catch a break. Like, that's awful. Oh. I'm not very good. I can't even communicate my words for it all, to be honest. It's just, what do you say? Like, oh, those children. I just, you know, you want them to live the best life that they possibly can now.
Mm.
And then for something like that to happen in 2018, it's like, come on, world. Like, come on, humans. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah. On a more positive note, by 2020, some of the children are living independently, some live in their own apartments, and some go to school, and one has even graduated college.
Yes.
But yeah, this case is so sad, and I don't know how any adult can treat a child like the Turpins treated 15 of their own children.
Yeah.
But I hope that the Turpin children are able to find some peace.
Yeah, absolutely. Peace. Peace.
Yeah, they deserve it.
They just deserve freedom and peace and to do whatever they choose to do. Well, yeah, and a very emotional one. It's our first episode that got us both, like, tearing up. Oh my gosh. It was bound to happen. And yeah, well, thank you, definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It was... yeah, very well done. And what a tragic case. It's probably, I mean, we cover a lot of tragic cases. Yeah, that is true crime, yeah. But this one
hits so hard. So hard.
For sure.
But do you want to talk through the socials in case anyone wants to give their take on the case?
Yes, absolutely. So you can send in your personal true crime or paranormal stories to our email address, goreandguiltypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on our Instagram @goreandguiltypodcast or follow us on Twitter @goreandguilty. We've recently uploaded a website, so you can now check it out. It's all brand new and snazzy. I'm sure there'll be some tweaks and changes, but you can check it out at www.goreandguiltypodcast.com. On there, we've got a special page where you can write in your reviews and give us some beautiful stars. And if you don't feel like emailing us your true crime or paranormal stories, there's actually a little thing on there as well where you can send them in through there to make it your life easier, as well as other case suggestions. But yeah, go and check it out and see what it's all about. Pretty pleased with it. But thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as you can. I mean, it was pretty tragic. But yeah, remember, we won't judge if...
gore is your guilty pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. Bye.